thanks for coming to the presentation. My name is Luis Useche, and I will present in truly non-blocking rights. This is an idea to eliminate disk read that is happening when an application tries to write to a page that is not in memory yet. Right. So this work is in collaboration with Ricardo Coller and Ryan Nagaswamy. We are from Florida International University, and Akshat Verma from IBM Research India. So let's start. First, the memory access granularity is smaller than disks. Usually, applications access the memory at 8 bytes granularity, while disks are usually much larger granularity, 512 bytes, but operating systems usually go with 4K. So this implies that when application writes or do an 8-byte write to an out-of-core page, a page that is not cached in memory, the operating system has to fetch a full page in order to complete the write. So let's just give the process. So a process tries to write a page that is not in memory. And then since the page is not in memory, the operating system catch a miss, and it issue a read operation. Once the read is completed, the page is populated, the control is returned to the process, and finally the application can write what it wanted to write. So in this paper, we're concerned about the step 4. And the question we have is why the application has to wait for a data that it doesn't actually need to keep running, right? So we saw this in Linux, in BSD, and also in Xen, either by inspecting code, reading documentation, and even I did some experiments that confirmed this. So let's see what non-blocking writes will do. It tried to write again, and the operating system take control. But now, instead of issuing the read, we create a patch with the data that the application was trying to write. Afterwards, it will issue the read, and it will return control to the application, so the application can return. So the application can move forward while this I/O is happening in the background. Once the I/O is complete, we just apply the patch to the data that was read and have the page up to date. Okay, so the benefits of doing something like this is that the application execution time will be reduced. Now we don't have to wait for this foreground I/O. We see an increased backend store bandwidth usage. Now we have more outstanding I/Os because there could be several requests that are served at the same time. I mean, several faults. So in the motivation, we see a higher page fault rate. And, well, the first one is that the memory is overcommitted in virtualized environments. I found this, I don't know if you can see that, it's probably too small. But, well, I found this pie chart from VMware webpage. And it says that 50% of, in a survey, 50% of administrators overcommit their data center, their servers. And this was 2008. I'm assuming that it's probably higher now. Now, there is also more processes running with multi-core and also virtualized environments. So these processes are competing for resources, including memory. And that means that now we also have more higher page faults. And finally, the memory hierarchy is moving towards a more active and faster backend store, right? So we are delegating more and more load to these backend stores. And we can do that without losing average performance. In terms of motivation, we start with a small experiment, and we wanted to quantify how much of the total page faults can be handled in a non-blocking way, asynchronously. So we calculate this, and with three workloads, image processing, image processing, developer, and server. And the image processing is just rendering SVG images. In the developer, it's usually unit and performance testing. And in the server, we have application, like Tomcat, database, and mail server. So we said we have a virtual memory simulator that replayed full system memory traces, and we set the RAM of that simulator to be 50% of the application footprint. So this is a graph. We have in the y-axis the percentage of non-blocking faults that can be handled asynchronously, and the x-axis all the workloads we try. It's separated by type. And what we see is that for most, or for three of the types, there is at least one workload that have almost 20% of its page fault that can be handled asynchronously or non-blocking. In the case of the server, which is where we see most of the benefits, there are cases where it even surpassed 80%, right? So that means that we have 80% of all page faults that would usually be handled synchronously. Now we can handle it asynchronously, so the application can move much faster. In terms of alternative to non-blocking writes, well, the first one is let's provision the amount of memory that we need perfectly. But in reality, applications' access pattern could be unpredictable or could be even unbounded. I mean, you cannot provision memory for the whole file system. We also have prefetching, but the problem with the prefetching is that it can incur false positive and as well as false negatives, and in the case where the access is completely random, it's ineffective. Another way is to use asynchronous system calls, but with asynchronous system calls, it cannot work with memory map memory. It can be anonymous memory or memory map to a file, and the written data is not immediately available for the rest of the system to read. Okay, so let's see what kind of challenges could have something like this in a real implementation. A process usually have two ways of writing data in memory. It can either do a system call with a normal POSIX write or some of its variant, and usually have all these parameters, or it can do a direct write, a store instruction, which, in case the page is not in memory, will trigger a fault. Okay? So for these two cases, we should be able to create a patch, the patch that I talked before, that has a copy of the data. It has the number of bytes that were written and also the destination address, which is the location where that data should be written at the end. So having said that, now we need three informations in order to complete these non-blocking writes. We need the write offset, which is the destination address, the data written, and the size of the data. So in the first case that we call the supervised mode, the operating system has full control of the write. In that case, we have all the data we need. And it's just the parameters that is passed by the application, the function, on the system call. In the case of the unsupervised, the bottom case, the operating system has just the information that the CPU provides. Right? It only provides a write offset. Actually, we couldn't find any other architecture that provide more than that. And the data written as the size of the data, even though it's there, is not provided directly by the CPU, or there are no facilities to provide that. Okay, so given that the supervised mode is obvious, we have all the information we need, we're going to focus on an unsupervised mode, because that's where we need to extract the remaining data. Okay, so we have three methods of extracting this data. The full feature hardware, and that means that the CPU provides all the information we need, and we pass that information to the fault handler. So this is fast. It's not architecture independent because each CPU has to provide this information. And in terms of memory overhead, we only need the the data that was written, we only need in memory the data that was written by the application. So we don't have any extra overhead. Another technique is to disassemble the opcode. So for instance, here's a MIPS instruction, store instruction. And we know that it's a store word, so it's 4 bytes, and this is the data and the offset, right? So we have all the information we need. Again, it's really fast, even though it's now part of the path of the fault handler. We need to implement it for every architecture. And finally, it's also low overhead because we only have the same overhead than the full feature hardware. We have a third solution, and our only architecture-independent solution that we call PageDiff Merge. And in here, the idea is that we have two buffer pages, one full of 0, one full of 1. We write to those buffer pages. And then with the disk page, which is here, and some bitwise operation, we're able to get the update page. So this is not fast. We have to write twice to memory. It's architecture independent. But it's not low memory overhead. Now we need two pages instead of the two additional pages instead of the only one that we need in the previous cases. Okay. So let's see how we quantify the benefits of non-blocking writes. And well, the first one is that the fraction of non-blocking write faults that we already saw in the motivation. The other one is the outstanding write faults that measure the additional parallelism that that non-blocking write is able to add to the system, and the savings in execution time. Right, this is new. This is not in the paper. So, just very quickly, a description of the virtual memory simulator. Well, the input is the RAM size and the full system memory traces. The full system memory traces we were able to get by instrumenting QEMU. And the output is the performance statistics and all the information we need to do all the plots I have. So the memory size for all the cases were set to 50% of a worker footprint, as I mentioned. And in this particular case, we don't need to create patches because it's a simulator. We don't care about the data. So I didn't really apply any of the three techniques I explained before. So, the first one is how to measure the parallelism. And for that, we created the outstanding write faults metric, which is just the number of parallel write faults that are happening at any time. Right? So just to put this in context, the outstanding write fault this should be the other way around. It's less or equal than outstanding IO. So that means, the outstanding write fault will always be less than the outstanding IOs. At the end, it's just IOs. For a single thread application, the outstanding write faults will never be more than one. There cannot be more than one fault happening at the same time for a single thread application. And for non-blocking writes, there is actually no limit on how many outstanding write faults you could have. It just depends on the access pattern of the application and how and what is the page fault rate. So in order to measure how this number varies in time, we created this expected outstanding write fault, which is a time-weighted average of the outstanding write fault. And I have here a small graph showing that in all our applications. So again, in all types, we have at least one that is almost 20 outstanding write faults. And that means that a long time, it's able to sustain 20 additional outstanding IOs compared to a single thread application. The server again is the one that benefits the most, and there are cases where the outstanding write fault is even more than 30. Okay, so in terms of the time reduction, these results are not in the paper. And we measure the execution time as the trace time, which is the time for the trace to execute with perfect provisioning of memory. There are no faults. plus the synchronous read times that the new faults will cost on those races. So the write time of dirty pages on eviction are ignored, and that means that this is just a rough estimate. The error will be proportional to the number of dirty pages that will be evicted. That is usually low in real systems. Again, this is another graph. In the y-axis now, we have the percentage of execution time decrease. And well, in the image processing, we have almost 10% of decrease. In the developer, I guess is the one that benefits less. But there is at least one that have almost 10% or 10%. And in the server case, there is up to 52% of improvement in execution time. So there are four workloads that we found here that doesn't benefit as much with the non-blocking rates. Okay, so to conclude, we present a non-blocking rights that is a technique to eliminate the read before write when the page is not in memory. We saw that by doing this, we reduce the execution time and increase the device usage. And we estimate a reduction in times from 0.1 to 54%. In the future, we're planning to implement non-blocking rights to better study its implications. And for instance, what workloads benefit the most from non-blocking rights. So with this, I conclude my talk. Thank you.
I'm Asar from Permit. Have you guys looked at these things, I guess, on the right server loads that were mostly seeing a benefit from this? What kind of behaviors or patterns were in those applications? And why were they behaving in this way that we could, you guys could optimize them so they run double the speed performance?
Right. So, I tried to find the pattern. Why was this happening? And actually, I couldn't find why, you see more benefits in some workloads than in other. The intuition is that as you see higher write faults, you will have more benefits because it's there where non-blocking writes will work. I have that as part of my future work, so yeah, I'm planning to investigate that in the future of the project.
Okay, and also, do you have a sense on how common it is to have multiple outstanding writes to the same page?
No, the idea is that if we have, so the first write to a page that is not in memory will create an I/O, right? Mm-hmm. And it will be a single I/O. And then writes to the same page again, will create multiple patches, I guess a cascade of patches, that once the I/O is finished, will apply.
Sure, I understand that. I was wondering if you had any data on how commonly that happened with your workloads. How common was it to have 1 or 10 or 100 outstanding for a single page?
Oh, I see. Well, I guess the closest we have to that was the expected outstanding write fault. There was I guess I have it here. There was some cases where it went to 20. And actually, this one was, the last one is pretty interesting. It's not 50, but 2,000 or something. So, so there are cases, it varies a lot. And again, I my intuition is that it depends on the access pattern of the application.
Thank you.
Hi, Carl Walzberger. This is really interesting work. Have you looked at the impact of concurrency in the server workload? So normally, if you take a page fault, you can do a context switch. The operating system will do a context switch to another process. And
right.
I was wondering for the applications that you looked at, if you're looking at multiple consolidated applications or a single application running, or could you comment on the concurrency aspects?
Well, the applications we run, they're actually part of a benchmark suite that is called Dacapo. And in the case of the server, I remember there were Tomcat and also HSQL DB applications. I remember that they were multi-threaded. I don't think there were too many threads, I guess. Yeah, so I don't know if that answered your question.
It helps a little bit. I also had another comment where I think this would be particularly valuable in a virtualization context, and it's right. slightly non-obvious. It's that when you take a page fault at the hypervisor level, it's a hidden page fault that the guest operating system isn't aware of.
Right.
And normally, like I mentioned, well, if you take a page fault, at least if you have other work to do, you can context switch and try to hide the latency of that of okay. that operation. In the virtualization case, you'll block an entire virtual CPU.
Right.
So the virtual CPU can't context switch because it's transparent to the guest.
Okay.
And so this may actually have a bigger win in virtualized environments than non-virtualized.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I have one question, too. Does it affect the file system recovery process or generally mechanism? Have you thought about that?
By recovery, you mean when there is a
parse system failure, system crashes, and
right. So, I guess it could help. Well, when you're doing something like that, there is not really. No, actually. Probably won't help. The thing is that I'm trying to think on the when you are reconstructing the file system or you know replaying the journal, you are actually modifying a page
right.
that you need to read to get the information right. So usually, if you modify the page, you already have it in memory. So my guess is that it won't help that much.
I mean, this is a very aggressive approach to boost up the performance of the file system, and I think existing journal system can work with it, but I believe that there is a way to exploit the mechanism of this approach to fit to the existing journaling approach.
I see. So. Well, the thing is that this would work in cases where you somehow modify a data that you read before, mm-hmm. right? So actually, in the recovery case, you just boot the system. So.
Right.
Probably you haven't read anything yet. I don't know. That's where my intuition.
Okay. All right. Then let's thank the speaker again.